May the words of my mouth and the thoughts of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our Rock and our Redeemer. Amen. While my daughter was still attending her previous school, she was set a very basic research project. Well, nowadays, for her, it was quite complicated, but it wasn't too difficult, because she needed to research a country from which some of her ancestors had come from and list a few basic facts about that country, like the capital, the language spoken, typical food, outstanding natural features, the national bird, and the flag. Those students could research one aspect of that country a bit more. So my daughter chose Switzerland because some of my ancestors had come from there, and we lived there for some time. As she did her research, she became particularly interested with the national bird of Switzerland. In fact, she was so excited about it that she told me about it at home, something she certainly doesn't do with every school project. Often when you ask, how was school today? Good. That's about all you get, but that time I got a lot more. So I was interested in it as well. As she described the bird, I just couldn't picture it. She told me the national bird of Switzerland was the turaco. I had never heard of the turaco, but maybe it was a strange English name for a common Swiss bird. So I searched an image of the turaco online, and it seemed even odder to me, because I certainly had never seen a bird like that in Switzerland. It's very, very different from any bird you would see in Switzerland. But indeed, the online sources said that it occurred in South Africa and Switzerland. Strange. So when I Googled national bird of Switzerland, I got lots of sources which also clearly stated that the national bird of Switzerland was the turaco. So how was my own experience of the country so different from what it said online? Well, I tried a few searches in German. There was no mention of the turaco in Switzerland on any German websites. I looked through guides to the birds of Switzerland, and clearly there was no turaco there either. So a suspicion came to form in my mind. Could it just have been that someone soon after the internet began, somebody had confused Swaziland with Switzerland? By the way, Swaziland is now called Eswatini. To me, there was no other explanation. So Switzerland is in the middle of Europe, Swaziland down there in South Africa. This error somehow had continued throughout the internet, so that it was now accepted knowledge in the English-speaking world. When I recounted my experience on my personal blog, I was even told that now there are turaco and edelweiss souvenirs sold online, such as bedding. Well, the moral of the story is that you shouldn't believe everything that you read online. And also that education by internet research without the guidance of people who know what they're talking about often leads students down the wrong track. So, well, I had to break it to my daughter that the turaco was not the national bird of Switzerland. She was very upset and initially did not believe me. After some explanation, she finally seemed to accept it. But what is the national bird of Switzerland then, she asked. So I went to look on the internet myself, the font of all knowledge. Now, English language searches were no use because they only brought up the turaco. So I spent a lot of time searching in German. I soon discovered a major flaw with the question. It was not really a question the Swiss had ever considered. Coming from New Zealand, where we have the kiwi, we somehow presume that other countries also have a national bird. But that's just not the case. Switzerland does not have a national animal. Now, there are some symbolic animals for some of the cantons. For example, the ibex in the canton of Grisson, the bear for Bern and Appenzell, the eagle for Geneva, the lion for Thurgau, the ox for Uri, and the ram for Schaffhausen. Well, now, I don't think there are very many lions roaming the countryside of Thurgau. This is just an old coat of arms that developed over the centuries, nor are there that many eagles around Geneva. These animals in the coat of arms represent something quite different from what we would regard as the national animal. If you ask a question a certain way and expect an answer, you might eventually get an answer, but it might be wrong. So still, I had to give my daughter some bird. After searching in German for a long time, I came across some suggestions. Of course, the question then was how to translate all these bird names into English, because I'm not into birds that much. So at that point, I actually turned to somebody who was alive and who studied birds for a long time, my father. And he told me that the easiest way is to get the Latin name for each bird, and from that I could easily get the English name. He also categorically confirmed that the turaco had never been seen in Switzerland. So I told my daughter that the red kite, this bird here, Milvus milvus in Latin, by the way, was the national bird of Switzerland, even though I knew that the golden eagle, the bearded vulture, of which I don't have a photo, and the alpine chough are also rated highly as typically Swiss birds. Now, this is just a small example how our technology distorts the truth and sometimes tells outright lies. With the rise of artificial intelligence, that's even more the case. While artificial intelligence seemingly can collate far more data than any human and express it quite concisely, we also had to learn that truth and factual correctness are not the strong points of artificial intelligence. It tells outright lies if they are plausible. So at the moment, some of these lies are so crass that they are quite easy to spot, but with its increasing use, it might be more and more difficult. Now, as several Christian commentators have found, most artificial intelligence programs out there are also very non-religious, generally giving answers that sort of cast some doubt on Christian beliefs. Now, as we are bombarded with more and more information and do not really know whether it's true or not, trust has eroded. When we see images, for example, we may carefully look for any hint whether they are real or whether they are AI-generated. So in a world of little trust, people also question the Christian message, of course. After all, the church has long been accused of being an institution that controls people and takes money from them. There's probably some truth to that, but I think mainly because the church is an institution. And in institutions, individuals seek power and try to get money for their own visionary projects or for the continuation of something that they are deeply involved in. At times, these institutions have provided a cover for abusive behavior. Now, however, unless an institution is not totally corrupt, I would argue that it actually does limit personal financial gain and some unregulated forms of influence. Because unfortunately, when churches have tried to remove sort of the institutional aspect, they have too easily been influenced and sometimes exploited by charismatic or manipulative leaders. So in this fallen world, the church always needs some controls. And of course, these can sometimes hinder and lead to even greater mistrust. But the message of the church is very different from the online knowledge that is sometimes so difficult to trust, because the gospel message that has been transmitted to us through the lived experience of many generations of Christians, and they have found solace and purpose in the cross and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Those Christians have found forgiveness and strength through Jesus. Even more so, they have encountered the living Jesus. They have experienced something of God's presence in their lives. They have seen the real difference that Jesus can make in their own lives. And so this is a living faith that brings people closer to God. So now I come to our readings, because this faith is based on the witness of those disciples who saw the risen Jesus. Of course, the resurrection was not something that was easy to believe, even for the first disciples. When we read the Gospels, we read how the disciples raised quite a few questions. In our reading from Luke, we read how when the disciples first saw Jesus, They were startled and frightened. They did not fully trust that this was Jesus, certainly not the Jesus who had gone through suffering and death. Some of them thought that this may be a ghost, and to them that seemed probably a more reasonable explanation than the resurrection. Now, in modern times, some people have suggested that the disciples easily believed in the resurrection because, well, you know, among the Jews back 2,000 years ago, there was a more general belief in the resurrection of the dead. Well, it's true that at the time of Jesus, Jews, or the majority of Jews, did believe that the dead would be raised. But they believed that this would only occur at the end of time. Jews, as just as any ancient people, knew that the dead could not live. And in comparison to our own time and day, those people at that time encountered death and dying far more often than we do. And they knew what happened when somebody died. So the thought of a ghost was probably more feasible than the resurrection. But it is by showing his hands and feet and by eating that Jesus showed the disciples that he was truly alive. Now, in our world of artificial intelligence, we are necessarily cautious of extraordinary claims. But even we normally can be convinced that something is real, for example, when we see somebody standing in front of us, or when we implicitly trust the source of the information. So the disciples understood that the resurrection of Jesus was real, and not only that, but also that the death and resurrection of Jesus, that this was according to the scriptures, and that it was fully consistent with the witness of Israel throughout the ages and part of God's plan for this world. As a result of that, they preached about it whenever they had the opportunity. And of course, as we read in the book of Acts, at that point they had a really good opportunity as Jesus' power was revealed through the healing of the beggar. So in a world of uncertainty, the witness of the disciples and of every Christian who followed Jesus provides a counterpoint to the algorithms that so often provide a distorted view of reality. May we not only listen to the witness of the Bible, but to all those Christians throughout the ages who have found peace and truth in Jesus Christ. And may we then also be witnesses to that living faith. Amen.